Hello and welcome to Podcast on Fire 20. It's Asian cinema in a podcast. I'm your host for today, Stuart Sutherland, joined as forever by Ken.
Good afternoon.
Yep, and it's just us for the moment, but hopefully Banner will be here soon. Eh? So starting off, we've got our last movies watched. Ken?
Ikin Cheng is the subject of this week's last watched for me.
Okay.
And it seems like I pursued this movie called Mermaid Got Married because I got the copy of Stu. In reality, I'll watch anything, and I saw this Laserdisc on eBay and it cost a shitload of money, and I thought I need to find some cheap option, and why not ask someone to make an illegal copy of the film, which someone did, i.e. you.
Uh-oh.
But then again, a mermaid movie, you know, you don't necessarily want to pay that much for it. You know, you want to test it out to see if it's something. Mm-hmm. And this 1994 movie, a few years before, I guess, he entered movie stardom.
Yeah, kinda.
Well, was he ever a big pop star before Young and Dangerous? Do you know that? You must know that.
Unfortunately, I don't. I think he might have... I think he started doing TV, then movies, then singing.
Ah, okay. Natural progression.
I think he's got more recognition for his singing than his acting.
What do you think of him as a singer, by the way?
Not really. But I think he's only thought of as a singer in Japan, but that is Japan, really. They are pretty bonkers for their kind of pop.
Maybe that's where the nickname Noodles came from. Because I've read I've read that nickname for him, Noodles.
Yeah, I've never had the one explained to me.
I just like that sound of it, Noodles. Noodles Chang. But anyway, Mermaid Got Married, the story of a boy who never learned to swim, and appropriately he's brought in as an adult to substitute at a school as a PE teacher. And this boy is Ikin Cheng. Of course, he gets pushed into the water, which is the second time, and also the second time he gets saved by a mermaid. This time, however, the mermaid stays on land because she loses her pearl, a very vital pearl, and goes down Ekin's throat. So she has to go on land and enter the school, and all kinds of shenanigans happen, and they, of course, fall in love, and yada yada yada, and and the English title sort of spoils it in a way. jumps way ahead of matters. Mermaid Got Married. You know, it's watchable, and I can say that for most of the films I watch, because you can get through it easily. But it's easy enough sap to sit through, but not sweet sap to sit through. And not approaching Turkey, not approaching really watchable. It's just, and also it's a bit unbearably dumb at points, because there are human forces that want to cash in on the discovery of the mermaid, and basically the real adult world. And that section just turns incredibly dumb and not fun at all. And it's wasted efforts by the likes of Ken Cheng and Yun King Tan and Dennis Chan. But anyway, it's easy enough to get through, and I guess there are enough Ikin Cheng fans there, and also Christy Chung fans. She plays the mermaid. And maybe fans of Takeshi Kaneshiro, one of his early films.
Mm-hmm. He looks fucking 12 in that movie.
Well, to be honest, he does, but he looks way too old to be in school in that movie. You know, it looks like he skipped... he had to go in ninth grade over and over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. An easy watch.
Yeah.
What do you think of it?
Yeah, mostly the same. I've only really watched it the once. I did kind of like... I did get behind the story, but it's just... I could never... I think it's the same with every single mermaid movie there ever is. Whenever you see, like, half woman, half giant fish tail, I just, like, really? It's even worse when it is kind of just somebody's legs and, like, they'll just fit into a big bit of material and they're flopping it, and, like...
You know, that aspect didn't bother me at all, actually. I think they did, based on the kind of cinema it is, and from the country it is, I thought they did well. I mean, today they would do a fucking CGI mermaid half of Christy Chung, and that would look even more stupid. I mean, they're even doing CGI blood nowadays. They can't really be bothered to, you know, blow up squibs, it seems. Mm-hmm. So, It was better in 1994 to they at least had the time to make a suit for Christy Chung to swim around in.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I can't actually remember too much of that film, but it's watchable.
Mm. One of his, maybe he had been in the movie industry about 1, 2, or 3 years, I can check, but I think this is like 5 or 6 movies into his filmography.
Yeah.
So it's fairly early. So for completists, I guess, but not the one movie to recommend.
Probably, yeah. Probably one movie not to admit.
But brief mention about the director, Norman Law. Not a talented director by any means, but the at least 2 movies have notable scenes in a way. A movie called Gunny's Law, made in the early 80s, sort of a gritty cop actioner with Philip Chan.
Mm-hmm.
Perfectly watchable, and... The Chow Yun Fat Yowie Wong movie, A Hearty Response, he also did.
Yeah.
Which is typically wild Hong Kong cinema experience. It's really wacky, and it's really tough on the violence, in the violence aspect towards the end of the film. Joey Wong really takes a beating in that film. And she's raped, and she takes revenge, and it's all within, you know, when you see the cover art where Chow Yun Fat has a mustache painted on his face, and it looks really sweet and wacky, and then you get that end reel to that film. So, but it's Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm.
No such thing in Mermaid Got Married. It's fairly balanced. There's no fucking shootout at the end where she pulls out her guns out of her mermaid half, which would be pretty cool. But anyway.
For me this week, I've not really had much chance to watch movies this week, but on and off I've been going through 2046, started watching 3 times, but probably the only one really worth mentioning was The Tai Chi Master. Luckily enough, it was on TV after midnight, but as you expect, it was the American dub retitled as Twin Warriors, and that film still holds up to me. Like, it's just a perfect example of the movies that, like, the style of movies you got at that time, sort of the wire foo films that kind of, well, it's just more similar along the lines of Jet Li's Fong Sai-yuk films, or maybe it's more Yun Wu-ping. Maybe it's more of his films for that time, with The Iron Monkey being, well, a very similar worked film with the wires and that.
Yeah, I've always felt there's a slight difference in their movies from that time. I always felt Yung Ho-ping's action was a bit more easy on the eye, or make it more clearer, the kind of waifu he did. Although, you know, Fong Sai-yuk 1 and 2 are, you know, fun movies in their own regard, but I always felt Koryun's action was a bit too wild.
Mm-hmm.
But just by smidgen, I mean, they're both watchable.
Yeah. But either, I think Tai Chi Master holds up to be one of the better Jet Li films from that period of time, where, well, amongst the Fong Sai-yuk movies, and I think just after the Once Upon a Time in China films.
Yeah, he'd done 2 or 3 by that point.
Mm-hmm. But, like, just with the cast of him, Chin Su-ho, Michelle Yao, and Yin Yat Kor? No, it's not him. It was Yun Chung-yan, who played the Taoist priest in the movie.
Right. That I don't remember, but I think and I'm not going to look it up because I'm a lazy shit. But the eunuch in Taichi Mazda, I think, was played by Lao Shun, who many may not recognize, but he's, I believe he played Wong Fei Hung's father in Once Upon a Time in China 3.
Right.
He's one of those cool, cool character actors. You recognize his face, but not necessarily the name all the time. But I've developed a bit of a love for his kind of acting, especially in Once Upon a Time in China 3. I think he's wonderful with Jet Li in the father-son role there. And even though I wanted to look it up, I really can't because the Hong Kong movie database is down.
Ooh.
So I'll have to correct myself if I'm wrong, but I know Lao Chun plays a eunuch in one of these waifu films from that time.
Alright, this always happens to us. So, but other than that, there's just a damn good film, and I think, am I right in saying that there might be a Dragon Dynasty re-release coming out?
It will be.
Yes.
I saw a cover art for it the other day, and finally looked rather handsome, actually. No added swords or guns in people's hands and shit.
Michelle Yao's bust.
Exactly. But look classy, and finally it can be, you know, they can make justice to it. There's always going to be something for people to complain about, but I'm sure the likes of you and me will find it a good DVD on these basic levels.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a movie screaming out for the most coherent subtitle translation, but when they can leave that Twin Warriors dub on there if they like, you know, the option of original language and stuff, as long as that's and it's original, then it's a good DVD.
Yep. Other than that, that has been my movies for this week.
Isn't that ironic, by the way, going back slightly, that people have requested movies for years and years and years and years and years, Taichi Master, Drunken Master 2, and and in the end there's always, you know, something to complain about, and often, more often than not, there's really, it's outside of that basic requirement bit, so I always find that strange, as always.
For our questions this week, Drunken Master, foreign favourite at the moment, asks us, what initially drew you to Asian cinema? Since I read out the question, Ken will have to answer it first.
It's a, you know, when you do ask people, they do answer that question in a way, but I thought it was a good idea to bring back this question because there are specific aspects that you were blown away by. And I'll briefly mention that I read an article by a quite famous Swedish movie journalist where he talked about you have to watch these films. They are playing now on these channels, and you have to watch these films by John Woo. They are absolutely amazing. So I'm, you know, forever in debt to that journalist for starting to watch Hong Kong movies at that point. Based on my movie interest, I'm sure I would run into the Asian cinema at one point, but maybe not to the point that I'm, you know, now writing about and stuff. Mm-hmm. But there was this John Woo festival on the movie channel, Bullet in the Head, The Killer, Hard Boiled, and Once a Thief. And the aspect that drew me was that article, but the aspect that blew me away was the combination of, you know, really explosive action in Bullet to the Head, to be specific, and really good character drama. It's a really punishing film to watch, and the combination of big and big, in a way, I didn't think that combination existed, that you could be serious about something and be so over the top with another aspect like action. Even though Bullet in the Head is not, it's not like Hard Boiled, and it's not like A Better Tomorrow. It's more, it seems to be more rooted, but obviously it's big in other aspects. The finale, the car jousting, which does seem out of place and probably is out of place if you really analyze it. But, you know, that I was blown away by, and therefore what initially drew me to Asian cinema was the modern action, the heroic bloodshed. And there's always, it's always three different aspects, I think, that people are drawn to, and to you can divide it quite easy between Bruce Lee, Jackie Chan, and John Woo in a way. To be really easy about it, to really explain it in a lazy way, and I got into it via John Woo, and now he's exploring everything.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, that's it.
Actually, thinking, I read up this question the other day in the forum, and I kind of put more thought into, like, it wasn't, well, it seems to be an underlying thing for a while, and it was just until I got my first DVD that sparked it, because that didn't happen to be the first Asian DVD I got, that happened to be the first DVD I got ever. Well, as well as, like, the first DVD player that Christmas, and, like, what happened to be a PlayStation 2, but getting your first DVD, and it just felt like the right thing to do at the time was to collect them all. I think it's the same when you read, like a series of books, and you like the first one, then you want to collect every one after that. No, that's just a librarian thing, but still. I think, for me, as I said before, it is a something that's been in my subconscious for a while. Like, when I was young, I'd rent the Jackie movies, where it would be, like, it was First Strike, Rumble in the Bronx, things like that, because, like, they're always really entertaining for, like, a young perspective, where you just see, like, Jackie Chan do all these amazing things, like, the guy was sickly talented. And this was, like, the day where you didn't like, concentrate to look out for stunt doubles. You just enjoyed the movie.
And nowadays you're just saying, oh, that's Mars, and that's Chinkalok, and that's
I know, in a way, you do feel you could just switch off your entire brain and enjoy it. You don't want to raise an eyebrow and say, I don't want to do that with my movies. And most of the time I don't, but I think, unless it's stupidly obvious, where obviously it's like a stuntman doesn't cover his face, and it's actually a black guy, like.
And that scene in Righting Wrongs where Cynthia Rothrock does a roundhouse kick, and all of a sudden you know you're seeing Yung Bu, but in a blonde wig. So I mean, but you know, that's the thing, you notice it for a second, even that obvious scene. And you go on with it, and that's the power of a movie, even though it's a basic and silly movie like Rumble in the Bronx, or First Strike.
And when I'd first got, so it was like a careers thing in school where you'd work in a, well, work for someone for a week outside of the school, just sort of like a work experience thing. And funnily enough, mine was a library, so I had gotten a hold of Jackie's book, My Life in Action. And when reading through that, if you haven't read the book, it is a fascinating read. The guy had such an interesting life. And when reading it, I was picking up all these names of how he was bullied by a guy called Sammo. He had, like, a wee brer called Yim Bu. And it wasn't until, like, the summer that year when I was on holiday, and I was in, like, a W.H. Smith or a Woolies, and actually found, like, a copy of Millionaire's Express, like, in the VHS aisle. And it's sort of just, like, I just marked out, going, that's that Sammo bloke, and it mentions Yung Bu as well.
That's he who bullied Jackie Chan. Let's get him! By buying the movie, watching him.
Unfortunately, I never bought it. I don't know why, but it's just, why not? I think it was just funny that I actually saw those names outside of the book. Like, these, I never actually thought, like, people other than Bruce Lee and Jackie Chan had made an impact in the UK and had movies available. I just thought the foreign section was just a Jackie Chan aisle.
well, there you go. But there you go again about that basic dividing I talked about, Bruce Lee, Jackie Chan, and Yong Woo. It's sort of is true in a way. If you look at the kind of exposure and impact. But with that comes an exploration to go in the subgenres or to go to the people that can stand equally beside him.
Mm-hmm. Then there was it either Mike or Aaron Terrell who spoke about like what movies HMV were interested in. Has it got Jackie Chan, Jet Li? If it's not got them, fuck off.
Mm.
But it is such a selective market, and nowadays you're lucky that you have the internet, because now you have the variety of everything.
And even Chapman Toe has his own categories. You can look up
yes.
Basically an aisle of Chapman Toe movies and Dean Sheck movies.
Okay, there's the good and the bad, basically.
Yes.
It has to be evened out somewhere.
And the Dean Check aisle is full of spider web, and it's down in the basement, and probably poisonous
the bargain
dust.
Bin.
Exactly. Well, not even the bargain bin. The
slash damaged goods.
Toxic, the toxic waste pile.
Yeah. It just seems to be a subconscious thing for me when it comes to Asian cinema. I'd liked it all for a while, but never actually pursued getting the movies because I never thought I had the access at the time to get them.
Which was the first DVD you ever got?
Once Upon a Time in China 3.
Ah, yeah, that's right.
The most random first Hong Kong movie yet. Well, it had Jet Li in it, so it couldn't have been that random.
Oh.
You probably got an HMV.
Well, I gotta say, Dream into Asian Cinema, it'd be Kung Fu. I mean, it was one thing that's utterly undeniable about Kung Fu. It is really fucking cool. And so, when I was a kid, you know, seeing any kind of karate or kung fu, any Bruce Lee films, anything Jackie Chan, any cartoons that had it in, it's just fucking cool. Karate Kid probably would have been a good in, and Turtles, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, or Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, depending on your age. Both of those would have just had me and my cousin jumping around on my auntie's bed, practicing our flying kicks. And it's just cool, you know, you watch it, it's awesome, and then you want to copy it. So that would be initially what got me into Asian cinema, and then, you know, as you get in, you watch a few films, you watch a few more, and then it links, you know. I watched Jackie Chan films, then I saw Sammo Hung, watched some Sammo Hung films, Yuen Biu, same there. And then it just kind of, it's like a spider diagram. You start off with Kung Fu is fucking cool in the middle. And then it just branches out until you're watching Dean Sheck films and...
Exactly, I was about to say, then it hits a brick wall when you encounter Dean Sheck.
Yeah, that's kind of one of the spider legs that stops quite stumpily, I think, and doesn't really carry on from anywhere. Yeah, but that's basically it, Kung Fu. I just thought it was awesome, and so it's kind of progressed. I think, actually, I went off on the wrong track when I was a bit younger. You know, started off with Bruce Lee, Turtles, Karate Kid, all that kind of cool stuff. And then started really loving Jean-Claude Van Damme. And watched just tons of Jean-Claude Van Damme films and quite a few Steven Seagal.
Nah, I think we've all done that.
But then I got back on the right track.
I mean, they were big at the time. What's the thing at the time? So, I mean, you know, it's okay to dislike it now, but, you know, there are stuff that you can like from that era, although not as much. I mean... There's like one or two Steven Seagal films that I think are, you know, they're okay. Or same with Van Damme. But not the majority of the...
Van Damme I still quite like a bit, actually. I mean, the problem with that is that once you've got into watching, you know, Sammo Hung or, you know, Jackie Chan, The Playground Fight, or Iron Fisted Monk or Prodigal Son or something like that, or Lau Ka Lung even, film, you kind of, you know, it looks a bit rubbish in comparison. But Steven, it's hard to fathom or believe that actually at one point Steven Seagal was like the biggest actor in the world. You know, Under Siege and stuff were taking hundreds of millions of dollars. Mm-hmm. And he was like one of the biggest stars in the world.
Yeah, like I eagerly anticipated like movies like On Deadly Ground and watched them at the cinema.
Ooh.
You know, he was like, this is it. This is the flick. This is the this year's most anticipated event. And it's got Michael Caine. Michael Caine. Jaws 4.
Oh, that film sucks ass, doesn't it?
And On Deadly Ground sucks ass as well.
Oh, that's what I meant. On Deadly Ground. I haven't even seen Jaws 4. On Deadly Ground. Oh, that's a terrible, terrible film. That's one of the ones where he's, you know, wandering around in his poncho, trying to be Man of the Earth, isn't he?
Yeah, and it ends with a very, you know, so-called prophetic speech about we must save the world, the environment. This is happening.
Yeah, absolutely.
After he's, you know, done his violent thing.
Yeah.
Fucking Joan Chen is in that movie as well. I mean, the obviously it was a good thing to appear in a Steven Seagal film at that time, but, you know, Michael Caine and Joan Chen and Steven Seagal. Can you imagine that today?
Not at all.
Our second question. Drunken Master asks us, who is your favourite dramatic actor in Hong Kong films and what do you consider is their finest performance? Ken?
It's always easy to answer Chai and Fat, and I would like to, but I will direct your attention to someone more recent, someone in a later generation. I think that for me would be Francis Ng, which is, you know, not the finest dramatic actor, but one of the best character actors in Hong Kong. And just like Chai and Fat, one of the biggest whores. Not horse. He's a pony. He probably could play a pony if he could. But anyway, you know, you have that Young and Dangerous connection when you first saw Francis as this really outrageous, over the top guy, and that was not maybe his public image, but the image in people's minds. I think that this is a crazy actor. Crazy, he only does crazy things, and no wonder. I mean, he then went on to Once Upon a Time in Triad Society 1 and 2 and a few other things. But during my second discovery of Asian cinema, because I had a break for a few years and I started buying DVDs again, and one of the first I got at that time was Bullets Over Summer, which just seemed like a good buy based on reviews, and that was when I saw Francis as this, you know, wonderful, wonderfully charismatic actor, and who could communicate with very little. I mean, there's an intensity to his performance in that film, but there's also a very subtle aspect to it, where it's not about words. It's just about, you know, presence and subtle acts. And, you know, it's to go on from there. Where do you go? You obviously go to Juliet in Love, which I think is his finest performance. And you could go on forever why, but it's just a perfect subtle performance, and his presence is excellent. And even though it's subtle, it's not abstract as such. You know, as you know by now, it's a movie that you might want to take a look at again during some sections, but it's not, you know, it's not an art actor that automatically feels it needs to be part of abstract movie making where nothing happens. You know, everything does happen in Juliet in Love, and it's very clear. And then you watch a few more films with him, a few more films where he has hair, and you try to get used to that. And he even does well in romantic comedies now and again. That movie Bakery Amour, did you ever see that?
No, but I did see Beauty and the Breast.
That was shit though. And even though he had tits in that film, that no thanks, never again.
I'm sorry, I just had to shit on your moment there.
Well, it's not a romantic comedy, it's just a bad comedy. So, Bakery Amour is a bit of a Forrest Gump performance for him. He's slightly mentally disabled. A big kid in an adult body. And anything Francis does nowadays, even though you know beforehand He's in a cheap gangster movie. There's bound to be something that is watchable. I mean, that's the movie Woohoo. With Eric Tsang. He's very good in that.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Triad performance once again, and I got that Bulletin Brain here on the pile, and looking forward to watching that to see if there's something.
Mm-hmm.
Because he can own the screen easily.
My answer to the question, I pretty much think my favourite dramatic actor in Hong Kong films just happens to be, you know, everyone that starred in the Inferno Affair movies.
I thought you'd say Young and Dangerous
him.
Shut it.
Some of them in Young and Dangerous would apply. Maybe not all.
That's the thing, that most of the fuck in that film, well, obviously Francis Zoom plays well as a dramatic actor, as you've well mentioned. He can do it on some occasions when he's given the right type of movie.
Yeah.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. The example I'm thinking of is probably Floating Landscapes, where obviously he didn't have much time in that film, but still, he was fairly neutral in it.
Yeah, it didn't harm.
Mm-hmm.
It was, a springboard for the drama.
Mm-hmm. But it's sort of like actors like Andy Lau, Tony Leung, well, most folk in those movies already are well-established dramatic actors, like Anthony Wong.
Eric Tsang.
Mm-hmm. In the further movies with... Who was the actor starring across the room? Anthony Wong. In the second one, where was his pal?
That was that mainland actor.
Aye.
Hu Jun. I don't think you're thinking about him.
Mm. And in the third one with the guy from Hero playing the mainland...
Chen Dao Ming.
Yeah, that's his name. Thought he'd done really good in that film. But either that or most recently it's the Johnny To movies, because near enough everyone that stars in those movies is like they've reached the top of their game when they're in those movies, because wait, no, that just actually sounds like a really bad answer.
Now it does apply.
Mm-hmm.
Because looking at Mad Detective alone, that is a movie that needs dramatic performances, and obviously Lau Ching-wan's performance is the main one in that regard.
Yeah.
Lau Ching-wan can obviously do more than just appear in Johnny To movies, as he's shown with Derek Yee movies and tons of stuff.
Mm-hmm. And eventually being recognized as the best actor for My Name Is Fame.
Finally.
Mm-hmm.
Did you read what he what part of his acceptance speech was last year?
No.
When he got up there, he was nominated against Aaron Kwok for After This Are Exiles, or mm-hmm. and maybe Andy Lau, but at least Aaron Kwok, and he was talking about jokingly that I would like to say thank you to Robert Kwok and his elders, even though he is older than them, but they have won awards before him. So, he had a relaxed stance about the fact that he's been nominated so many times
mm-hmm.
and never won, and Aaron Kwok has won.
Yeah.
You know, had won twice in Taiwan and won one time in Hong Kong at that time, I think, anyway. So, it was... he gave a shout-out to Tony Leung as well, Robert Leung.
Mm-hmm.
It was quite touching to see that. For me personally, anyway, to see him finally win... did look so happy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was not a random thing where he appeared in this this Wong Jing comedy. We'll nominate him and give him the award for that, just to get the award out of the way. It was the proper movie in a way,
mm-hmm.
because the movie was so similar to real life in a way.
And I think he must have been at the time filming Mad Detective when he accepted that award, judging by his look.
Yeah, he looked shaggy yeah. Really worn down. And I thought, Jesus Christ, Lau Ching-wan, he's old. But when you look at Mad Detective, it's obviously, it's part of that design, because he doesn't look that old at the beginning of the film.
Mm-hmm.
He looks distressed, but not, grey-haired.
He could have tidied up, come on. It's like going to the Oscars wearing jeans. I'll be alright, they'll no notice. But yeah, I'll choose Lao Qingguan for this one. I'm definitely looking back to more of his other stuff, and I think obviously not all of them being big drama movies, but I'm interested in seeing The Longest Night because I want to see what other stuff he's done with Johnny too.
Oh, he's so cool in The Longest Night. He is so badass in that film. Looks
bald.
Great with a shaved head indeed.
Yeah.
And suitably, Johnny To shaved the hair of Lao Qingguan's head himself. So it's actually on the Hong Kong DVD, that segment. They did it as a press thing, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of fun.
Oh, well. But so we may as well get your answer on this question, Mike, if you've got one set up.
Okay. I was going to go through... I was just having a little think then. I was just going to go through maybe some people that I think are really good, but, you know, not necessarily my number one. It's not according to what you want to class as dramatic actor. Are we talking about, you know, somebody who just does serious dramatic roles, or are we talking about acting that doesn't involve, you know, screen fighting and stuff like that?
It's an open thing, I think. I mean, I said Francis, but he's done, you know, everything except martial arts, maybe. And I could have said Chiang Fat, and he's obviously done everything. So it's not just, you know, guys who just focus on drama and stuff. So, I mean, it's an open answer, very much an open question and answer.
Well, I mean, Chow Yun Fat would obviously pop up, and Stephen Chow. But they're kind of, I think, more based on, it's like Clint Eastwood or John Wayne or something. They're not necessarily, they're not character actors. They're kind of quite similar in each film to their previous film, but, you know, it's about kind of star power and charisma and watchability and, you know, they draw empathy and things like that. And so I consider them good actors, but they're not kind of, you know, Daniel Day-Lewis or, you know, turn yourself into any kind of character, method actor or anything. But I could still consider Stephen Chow a very good actor. I mean, King of Comedy, as well as being really funny, has tons of pathos and,
yes,
you know, it's got depth, emotional depth to it, as well as being righteously funny. But then, if we're going character actors, then I'm going to go proper old school, and Ku Fung and Law Leap, which, you know, I've mentioned many a time on Puff as a Shaw Brothers legends. But they're both amazing actors who kind of, you have kind of charisma, but are just able to do any role. You know, light-hearted comedy, playing evil white-haired foxes, and just the kind of actors that only need a small amount of material and they can run miles with it. Like Ku Fung in Secret Service of the Imperial Court, which I think in America was called, is it Police Pool of Blood?
What the hell?
I think that's the title.
It sounds very disconnected, those two
indeed.
Titles.
Category 3.
Shaolin Imperial Court, I would guess. Would have guessed.
Ninjas in the Shaolin Imperial Court.
Fucking hell, yeah.
That sounds awesome. Yeah, in that he plays a kind of a father who's conflicted by loyalty to, you know, his country and his duty and his honour, and, you know, his attachment to his son, and the two conflict. But it's not a massive role, but he just brings so much depth and, you know, angst, and it's just an amazing performance. It really stands out in such small screen time. He kind of just, he overshadows it whenever he's on screen. So then, having said all that, I think I'm going to go for somebody who kind of straddles the two, which would be Tony Leung. Do you laugh because I say straddles?
Well, no, just like you've talked about them so much, but it's like, but not, I'm not going to choose them. I've got someone else.
Well, I'm going to say Tony Leung Chiu Wai, who would be Little Tony.
Yeah.
obviously you mentioned him already from Infernal Affairs, and but he's got that kind of charisma and star power that, you know, I think any film he's in or any time he's on screen automatically focused on him, because he's just got it. But also he's an amazing actor who can really fit into a lot of different roles. I mean, looking through his filmography, I'd say Chungking Express, obviously he's really, really good in that, I think. Infernal Affairs, obviously a massive classic in that one. Also Gorgeous, the Jackie Chan film, which is a pretty, you know, it's not a great film. It's got some really good action in it. But Little Tony he totally steals every scene that he's in that film.
Despite playing the gay neighbour, stereotypically gay neighbour.
Yeah, but it doesn't come into, like, you know, stereotypical kind of, you know, incredibly camp, ooh, I'm hilarious because I'm gay neighbour.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's a dangerous proposition beforehand. But, yeah. But I absolutely agree. I've seen much, much, much worse performances in that regard.
But yeah, he just does something really good with it. And I think he steals every scene that he's in that film. And obviously, I mean, he's done all kinds of stuff as well. Obviously, like Hero, and his work with Wong Kar Wai, as well as doing action films. And I think he's just done everything.
Even Stephen Chow-esque comedy. Without Stephen Chow in it, the Chinese Odyssey 2002, I thought he was really funny. Even though you could easily put Stephen Chow there instead and it would have been the same thing, but I thought he was hilarious in that film.
Also, what I wonder as well, he's got, I don't know if you ever heard him speak in English.
Yes.
But his English is superb.
Indeed.
I'm quite surprised that he's never done an English language film. Because he must have had some offers. I would have thought, anyway.
Yeah, based on Wong Kar Wai and now Last Caution, I mean, probably offers are still coming in.
Which is interesting that he hasn't taken anything.
I think when I heard him speak, there was a radio interview he did in English around about the time 2000 or 2046 came out. I believe he spoke briefly about the fact that he wants to find a role that is, you know, worthy in a way. Because he is well aware that you could easily go over there and just be exploited in the most heinous of ways. You know, you're Asian, we have a comedy for you, you're the goofy sidekick, Mr. Big Dramatic, 10-time award-winning actor. This is for you. This is all you're getting.
We're going to team you up with Chris Rock.
Lord, no.
So I think he was looking at his options more carefully than anything else.
Yeah, so that's my answer. Tony Leung.
Cool. Moving on to the band segment this week.
I want to semi-hijack this segment, Stu.
Yeah, what?
I know. I want to put myself in the band segment with you.
Dear Lord, no.
I mean, it's mostly based on the fact
that... So Stu has to watch Mike? Is that it?
That'd be a bit weird.
It sounded a bit weird.
Well, I mean, it's mostly because I haven't got any money at the moment, but I've just got
a fuckload of movies.
Oh, I've got so many. I've literally got maybe... I've definitely got over 100.
Fuck.
There could be 150 films I haven't watched.
Oh, yeah.
And so I've just got to stop buying and start watching.
Well, just do what I done. Just make a big list and... obviously, number the list, see how much you've got, and just obviously start watching the movies, and make targets.
And then shoot yourself when you're done with the list.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to do my best to watch one a night. And then I'll start buying again, but I'm joining in with this.
Yeah, because I think I might be maybe done in a month's time, so...
Oh. Might take me about 4 months.
It'll just become your segment.
Yeah.
So basically, my update this week hasn't went down far since last time, but yep, it's down to 15 movies now.
It's going down.
What did you watch them?
2046. I'm in the middle of watching three times, unfortunately. Yeah, it was only those two this week. I've actually been watching other films which aren't on the list. So that's not helping me out much. But still, I've got, let's see, 15. I think next time we do a show, I'm going to have watched at least 5. And we'll try and get this finished before June. That's my deadline.
Interesting.
And that's it. We're moving on over to the plug-in segment for today. Starting it off, this is sort of a plug for the people up north. This week, the catalogue for the 62nd Edinburgh International Film Festival has came out. For our Asian cinema fans out there, there will be screening of several Korean films. There's Kavadar, Life Track, Milky Way Liberation Front, With a Girl of Black Soil, and the short animated film Mousetrap. Hopefully it is based on the board game. Please. And for our mainland China fans, we've got Fujin Blue, The Red On. It also has the Zhao Lu Gao China / UK documentary We Went to Wonderland. Unfortunately, there isn't actually any movies from Hong Kong or Japan this year. But if for those that are interested, again, www.edfilmfest.org.uk. But it actually seems like the guys down south have the better hand of cards when it comes to film festivals. As Adam Terrell mentioned last week, there is the Tiger Festival, which is actually, for full, its second annual Tiger Far East Film Festival, which is taking place in Brighton and London. There's, I think, at least a dozen East Asian movies, everything from Memories of Matsuko to Dog Bite Dog, and finishing with Mad Detective. But yes, there is about a dozen movies being shown over 1 month between London and Brighton, so hopefully we're going to get our rep up there. So for more information, visit www.tigerfestival.com. Other than that, the normal plugs, podcastandfire.com, or our great forum, podcastandfire.com/forum. HKCUK.co.uk actually updated this week with a review of And Bloody Air. We've also got reviews of Forbidden Kingdom and several other films coming out really soon. I've got my finger out. Whey! And other than that, SoGoodReviews.com, GreenFanDVD.com. Don't visit SenaiShow.com. And that's it. Ken?
Staying within my little site here, even though the update I did today won't be as visible when this podcast comes out, but at any rate, speaking of Mad Detective, our review just came up today, and I'm rather pleased with the movie and my own writing, to be honest. I'm rather good.
Get yourself a pat on the back.
Aye. Very pathetic. Very pathetic. But when you go to the quick take section this week, there's not much to rival Mad Detective to Ninja Flix that even my second writer Troy hated, which should say a lot. American Commander Ninja and Born a Ninja, but also some good old fashioned Jimmy Wang Yu, which you can't be offended by or not enjoy. A movie called Screaming Tiger and the other called Tiger and Crane Fists, which I've spoken about on Podcast on Fire before. So, well-rounded, weird update from SoGoodReviews.com, and do visit this week, and the next week, and next week, and next week, and next week.
Make it your homepage for fuck's sake.
Absolutely. And there's also a link to Podcast on Fire on the page, so we're doing our bit.
Mikey?
Well, I'm only going to plug Green Fan, because this 26th, Ninja in Ancient China will be out in all major retailers in the UK. So it's popping up all over the websites of different shops and stuff at the moment, and it will actually be in high street stores then. Fingers crossed.
Well, I think what we should actually get our listeners to do, when they do find copies in store, send us a footy in and we'll put it on site.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Well, I'm going to be down there at my local HMV taking a photo, hoping it's there.
Oh, you're going to mean like, you're going to release it there, there's going to be a crowd, you cut the ribbon.
Yeah, I wish. That'd be awesome.
This is old school. Cool. Are you kids, you like old school.
Yes.
Don't you? Can't?
Anyway, I'm Stuart Sutherland.
Kenneth.
Mike.
And we'll catch you later.
Oh well. Welcome, Mike Banner. How are you?
Sweaty. It's absolutely roasting here today.
Yeah.
And I've just had to walk back from the train station with an injured ankle. Yeah, I had a sprain my ankle on Wednesday at work. Oh. Having a race with a 5-year-old girl. I won. but paid for that victory with a horribly sprained ankle that... got pretty swollen.
She tripped you up.
Yeah. That's, yeah. Well, I haven't been able to assess the video footage yet, but I'll have my solicitors checking that out.